way back in the 2000s, secret Teletoon employees aired three shows for guys and ladies and hooked us emo kids for decades. Now their fans are sexy hosts of Columbia House Party. Jake, what's up, man?
That's the best one so far.
Well, it's only because I called you sexy.
Well, yeah, of course. Why do you think I'm saying it's the best one so far?
Yeah, I know how to pander, man. This is the only thing sexier than the co-host of this podcast are the supporters listening, you know?
Man, see? Look how good that works.
Yeah. Just me giving a cheap Mick Foley thumbs up to the crowd right now. A reference that like two people who listen to this podcast will get.
I certainly don't.
That's for James Gleason exclusively. Shout out to James Gleason. Shout out to everyone listening. So it has been a running joke basically since we launched. One of our very first episodes was My Chemical Romance. And shortly after that episode released, it was announced that My Chemical Romance were coming back. That has happened an inordinate number of times with episodes that have aired, with episodes that we've recorded and you maybe haven't heard yet. It just keeps happening. We like to jokingly take credit about how we continue to bring back artists with this podcast. But what it really just shows is how strong the market for nostalgia is right now. And that seems to be focused specifically on the early 2000s. Jake, do you have any idea why all of us are just so comforted by things coming back from the early 2000s lately?
Yeah, I mean, it's nostalgia is comforting by definition.
Powerful.
It's powerful. It's comforting. I also think the fact that the people that were our age in the 2000s or a little older than us are now the people who are making decisions at networks and record labels. So that's probably why a lot of this shit's happening.
We're also now an entirely different kind of sad. We went from being teen sad to being the generation before us maybe ruined the earth and ruined our democratic systems and ruined a bunch of other stuff, real estate markets, things like that. So who knew you'd be living a similar life to 20 years ago, 20 years forward?
Because, socialist house party. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. Shout out to Karl Marx, you know, who who knows? Maybe he'll be a character on one of the relaunched shows that we're going to talk about today.
That's possible.
As I say that, so yes, we have jokingly forced some bands to come back with this podcast. Today, we're actually chasing. We're behind the eight ball on this one. Today, we are going to explore three shows that are reportedly returning. So yes, something is coming back and we are then covering that rather than the other way around. Those three shows are tied to the emo and pop punk booms of the early 2000s. Maybe that is, you know, listener by listener, fan by fan, but I think there would be a good number of us, particularly people who connect with this podcast, who have some sort of attachment to one, two, or all of Clone High, Undergrads, and Mission Hill. All three of those shows are reportedly coming back in some form sometime soon. So today, we break down those three. You know, Mission Hill, maybe a little less known than the others. Undergrads, a cult classic. And Clone High, the cult classic to end all cult classics with a cult classic theme song. Way, way back in the 1980s, secret government employees dug up famous guys and ladies and made out using genetic copies. Now they're prone to sexy teens. Now they're gonna make it if they try. So, Jake, we're actually going to pocket Clone High for the back half of the podcast.
Okay.
To keep people around. That song, by the way, is by Abandoned Pools and not, as I thought initially, Will Forte. It kind of sounds like him.
A little.
A little. Yeah, like if MacGruber did an album.
It's a great theme song. It's an all-time theme song.
It is an excellent theme song. That band, again, is Abandoned Pools. So before we get into these specific shows, at some point in time, all three of them were airing on Teletoon around the same time. That was originally Teletoon The Detour. It got renamed later to Teletoon at Night. Whatever you know it by. If you are a Canadian listener, you probably saw these shows on Teletoon. If you're an American listener, that might have been Comedy Central or what was the other one called?
Cartoon Network? Adult Swim?
Adult Swim, that's the one. Which is on Cartoon Network, right?
Yes, or what? I don't know if it still is. It definitely was back then.
So what do you... We did a very good job of not green rooming before this. Like, we didn't really talk. We just laid out the episode and didn't really talk about our feelings and connections. So, Jake, before we get into the specific shows, this block in general and having these three shows, and I don't know about you, but we're not going to talk about these two shows much. But I think because they were also canceled really early around the same time, Undeclared and Freaks and Geeks hold kind of the same place in my head along with these three shows. What's your memory of them?
I mean, they are all, I'm a little younger than you. So like these shows were Rude. Sort of, these shows like heyday for me is like seventh, eighth grade. So my, in like, especially eighth grade, which obviously is a very transitional year, I think for a lot of people, for a lot of reasons. So it's, they all stick very nostalgic of, it was Friday nights, I want to say they were on. So they all stick very nostalgic of being in my basement with my friend Justin and playing Final Fantasy and watching these shows every week.
What a combo. Like
that was the jam. That was the jam.
We talk about Final Fantasy 7? Is that what would have been out around
7, 8, and 9, I want to say, right then. But
I never got too into the Final Fantasy games other than Final Fantasy Tactics. Which anyone who knows me will be like, obviously.
Yeah, of course you got into the spreadsheet one.
Yeah, basically, yeah, anyway. The baseball simulation version of Final Fantasy.
Yeah. No, but I think that these shows also, I think because of the ages that so many of us were into them, these shows coincide directly with when we sort of began to or solidified our taste in music, which I think is why it's so tied into the emo pop punk boom for a generation. Like, I know that grade 8 was when I started listening to that kind of stuff outside of like Blink and Green Day.
Yeah, I think it goes two ways, right? Like, one, I think that age in general, maybe grade 7 to 11 or grade 7 to grade 8 to 12, wherever you want to draw the lines for yourself personally, I feel like that's such a taste solidification age where, you know, you're first old enough to seek out things on your own and you're not just absorbing what's on Much Music or what your parents listen to or what, you know, your best friend next door listen to or whatever. There's a little more self-searching. So those things maybe lock in with us nostalgically because that's when you start to lock those things in your taste. But also, you know, hand in hand, not only do these shows all make an excellent use of that type of music, pop punk and emo, but I think the themes and the way they resonate with people, you know, is similar to the way emo and pop punk resonated with people, not just, you know, in my case, how we've talked about the kind of counterculture aspect where I was the only one of my friends who, you know, listened to that stuff or you know, for times who looked that way with the different colors, spiky hair and labrae piercing and all that stuff. But also in terms of like, you know, how do we manage these teenage feelings and how do we navigate them, you know, not responsibly, but like, how do we navigate them honestly and genuinely without, you know, without victimizing ourselves and without kind of projecting from that? And I think all three of these shows did a good job of handling that in different ways. We're going to talk about them one by one. The first one we're going to talk about, we're not going in order. I structured this podcast horribly. I should have structured it Clone High, Undergrads, Mission Hill, but we need Clone High at the end for something I want to do at the end. So we're going to go just in a random order. We're going to start with Undergrads. Undergrads came out in 2001 on Teletoon in Canada, Comedy Central in the US, and Trouble in the UK. The first thing you might remember about Undergrad is that the theme song is performed by Good Charlotte. The theme song also rules. Good Charlotte also showed up in an episode called Risk. This is The Click by Good Charlotte, which also appeared as a bonus track on their 2000 self-titled album.
GC. So why walk on and listen to their CD? Some people laugh, they do it just to spite me. Behind my back, they don't know what I see. But I don't care what they say, I don't need them anyway. I'll just go about my day, but anyway.
Big question I have here, Jake, is do you give that show a chance without that theme song being as good as it is?
Probably not. And I say that as not a good Charlotte fan.
I also say that as not a good Charlotte fan.
But that song undeniably kicks ass.
Yeah. Top two good Charlotte song, and it ain't two.
Yeah, 100%. It was definitely home to a lot of mix CDs in eighth grade for me. Or I guess a lot of mix CDs were home to it, I should say. Yeah, that theme song kicks ass.
Yeah. For anyone who isn't familiar with undergrads and might be listening, just briefly, it is about undergrads and their first year, a group of students' first year at college. And you kind of run the gamut of personalities. You have Nitz, who is kind of the main character and moral center, who is a virgin everyman who also doesn't drink. And he's there with his high school buddies. He's rooming with Cal, who is the person for which everything comes so easy. He doesn't even notice that he's transitioning from high school to college, and that is frustrating for everyone around him. There is Rocco, who is kind of the archetype of someone who all the reasons he was popular and funny and liked in high school don't translate to college anymore because they're sophomoric and, you know, people are starting to outgrow you. And then there is Gimpy, who goes to a different school, and he's kind of the hyper nerd shut-in. There is also Jesse, who plays the role of kind of manic pixie dream girl. And then, you know, Nitz caught in the, oh, I don't realize the manic pixie dream girl is actually into me. I'm after this other girl who, you know, is the magazine cover checkbox.
I can't relate to that at all.
Yeah. So you kind of, you know, first of all, not to get all Sex in the City, but I think a lot of people probably saw themselves in one of the four main characters.
For sure.
Or Jesse. I guess five main characters. Jesse's probably in it enough to be a main character. And I think that was a lot of the draw, right? Is whatever your experience transitioning to college was, or whatever anxieties you maybe had as a high schooler ahead of transitioning to college, one of the characters was representing those. Nitz is kind of the foremost one in terms of unrequited love. And, you know, he hasn't experienced a lot of the things that you're going to experience in college and maybe you're anxious about, or maybe you're struggling through. And the show, in a really sensitive and genuine way, weaves through all of those. It weaves through Nitz's night out with a bunch of friends drinking and how he manages that sober. It weaves through, you know, him being a virgin and what that's like in your first year of university. You know, Rocco is the kind a butt of a lot of the jokes, but I do know some people who their college experience initially was like that, where, you know, hey, I'm the same person I was in high school. Why is it landing differently? So I think that's a lot of why the show resonated once people gave it a chance, is that there's a lot of, you know, all good shows kind of have relatable archetypes like this. And whether you find yourself in one of them, or you're kind of a Nitz Gimpy hybrid or whatever, you can find some relatability in these characters.
Yeah. And I think that, like, obviously when this came out and I was really heavy into the show, I was like 13, 14-ish, like grade 8, grade 9.
And so, like, you were already drinking and not a virgin, and you were so cool. And you were,
I was one of those things. I feel like, you know, this is about people in first year university, which is super transitional and, like, very trying to find your feet. And I think that being 13 and going into grade 9, or just being 13 in general, is a lot like that, which I think is why the show connected. And I'm sure there's things, if I have gone back and watched the other two shows that we're talking about today a few times. I've actually never gone back and rewatched Undergrad since probably like 16, 17 years. So I assume there's a lot in there that would now resonate with me more than it did then. But I do think the universal theme of who these characters are and what they're going through, and no matter what age you are, you have friends like this, especially if you're a stupid straight white guy. And I think that it, like, it is a universal show. And I think you're right. The reason it worked and wasn't just like trite bullshit was because it was so empathetic and sensitive to a lot of these things. And it wasn't just like playing them for jokes. And I think all three of these shows actually played, as silly as they could be and were, played a lot of the big emotional moments pretty straight, which was not super common, I think, back then for any sitcom, let alone cartoons.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I hold this, I think because their names are similar and they came out at the same time, I hold this kind of in the same space as Undeclared, which, you know, I think Undeclared is now known as maybe not a cult hit because it's not like an unbelievably good show, but it got so many people their start. Like
yeah.
That's Jay Baruchel and Seth Rogen and Jason Segel, Charlie Hunnam. Like, they all started out. That was their first big, Judd Apatow. That was like his first big project.
I think some of them were involved in Freaks and Geeks, but they both only lasted a year. So like those 2 years of shows is like everything.
Yeah. And it's like, so, you know, much for comedy. Those actors, it's kind of their college or whatever.
Totally.
And, you know, Undeclared uses the same character archetypes, where Steven is, they lay the nerd on a little bit more, but he's very similar to Nitz. And you have, I forget the character names, but Charlie Hunnam's, you know, beautiful British import character is the same as Cal, who it's just so easy for, and he doesn't understand why, you know, his roommates don't have it as easy with the girls. And, you know, Seth Rogen, I guess, is the closest thing to a Rocco character, a little more likable for sure. And you even have it right down to like the overbearing and geeky RA, which in that show I forget the actor's name, but he went on to be Jason Street's like wheelchair rugby counterpart in Friday Night Lights and one of the bad guys in the final seasons of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
That's a deep cut. And then it's the Dougler on the Undergrad side.
And isn't Amy Poehler an RA or like another RA or something on Undeclared?
Yeah, Amy Poehler's in it as well. Again, Jason Segel's like the jealous right. boyfriend. I will say I was an RA in fourth year of university. Okay. I was not like the Dougler. I would just like that to be clear.
Okay. I think that's a good thing to make clear.
Yeah. I was the cool RA who got in trouble for never writing anyone up. That was me, you know? Every RA thinks they're the cool RA. So, to keep this on music, throughout the course of undergrads, there is some great music in the background. You get Everlong by Foo Fighters, Butterfly by Crazy Town, Losing California from Sloan, The Planet Smashers, Alkaline Trio, Bare Naked Ladies. It is CanCon heavy too, so you have Bare Naked Ladies, Sloan, Vibralux, Sam Roberts, Reggie in the Full Effect. All of those bands pop up. Now, unfortunately, the show flopped. It was originally going to get a second season on Teletoon, but MTV pulled the funding and Comedy Central wouldn't pick it up. It was not done any favors by the US time slot getting moved around a whole bunch. In 2018, the creator of Undergrads, Pete Williams, founded a Kickstarter and raised $145,000 in Canadian and also secured the movie rights from MTV. He told Rogues Portal that the movie will pick up at the end of their summer break, so in between their first and second year. He's also said in interviews that there was a lot of debate internally about whether if you relaunch Undergrads as a movie, do you put it back in 2000, 2001 in the exact time period, or do you fast forward them ahead so that it can be relatable, like Simpsons style, where the characters don't age, but the time period changes around them, so it can be relatable once again. The reporting and the interview quotes on this vary. But it sounds like Williams was outvoted and it will be a period piece. So it will exist in 2001 or 2002, whenever that is. Not a time frame on it. Williams said because of the pandemic, his goal is like 2025 at the latest. And obviously there's a little pressure because of you raised all that money on a Kickstarter. You owe the people the movie. Williams, by the way, lives in Toronto now.
Huh. I have a thing I just realized that's kind of funny. That's music related to this show. Okay. And when I say just realized, I mean as you were talking just now. So when I was in high school, I think I've said this before, but a big way I would get into bands is I would, you know, download whatever I could find, individual songs from LimeWire or SoulSeek or whatever, and make myself a mix CD. That's how I got into them. When I got into Alkaline Trio, one of the songs on the mixtape I made myself that I'd found on whatever service was Bloodied Up, which is off From Here to Infirmary. And I have literally wondered now for 17, 18 years why that song was so familiar to me. And I've just realized because it was a song on Undergrads. And I have literally for my entire time listening to Alkaline Trio wondered why I knew that song, and I just figured it out, and I feel dumb.
That don't feel dumb. That's I'm sure we all have a lot of music things like that.
Yeah, that's funny. Good all right. to know.
Staying on the TV shows that influenced Jake's music taste, this one is not going to be as well received as your Alkaline Trio love. Mission Hill is the next show we're going to talk about. Mission Hill is from 2002. It was on the WB from 99 to 2000. They pulled it after two episodes, and only 13 of the 18 episodes even ended up getting made. However, they still, by the way, this show is created by Josh Weinstein and Bill Oakley, who were from The Simpsons originally. It did eventually get the same cult following as Undergrads and Clone High when it's made its way to Teletoon and Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. It was also popular outside of the US. And then critically, despite getting canceled after getting pulled after two episodes and not making the full run, it managed to win an award in 2000 for Best Series for All Audiences, which with its stylized design and honest approach to sexual and moral issues being cited as a reason. It also won a GLAAD award for how it handled a gay relationship in the show. It also, unfortunately, put Jake on the scar. Don't Let the Bastards Grind You Down by the Toasters. Mission Hill wastes no time. In the very first episode, the premise is this 24-year-old guy, his parents move away and they send his little brother, who's I think a senior in high school, to live with him. And it's kind of like an odd couple living situation, given that one is cool and kind of a deadbeat going through like a quarter life crisis and the other is a nerdy teen. One of the very first things, conflicts, is that the older brother wants to go to a ska show and the younger brother blows the cover that he's there underage, and it's a big deal, and they don't get to go to the ska show, Jake.
Well, they go, but he's too... Oh, no, they yes, don't. You're right. Sorry. He dances. He skanks at the party. Mm-hmm. That's right. I know at some point he skanked. Yeah.
The Grubermeister, after drinking right. too much Gruber right. or whatever.
Mission Hill is my favorite of these three, if we're being honest. I have rewatched this show so many times. I love this show. And yeah, it did put me onto ska, because ska is presented in the first episode as like a cool thing, because the cool character wants to go to a bar to see a ska band. And I was like, when I was, whatever, 13, 14, I was like, what is ska? And looked it up and... here we are.
Yeah, that's oops. Oops, nah, on the man. Part of Mission Hill.
Nah, man. Ska defines me as a person.
Whereas undergrads is relatable for the, you know, you're going through your first year, or maybe the transitions you're anxious about. Mission Hill, at least for people our age, Jake, was a little more beyond our reach. You know, some of the relationship stuff and party stuff is still relatable when you're that time. But the main character is 24 and he's going through a bit of a, you know, he wants to be an animator, but he's selling mattresses. And, you know, what do you, you're one of those kind of post-college lost mid-20s people, which I think is pretty relatable. You know, the type of person who, I don't know, maybe go back to school to switch into a career where they make way less money and have way less job security. I don't know. That couldn't have been me. But yeah, kind of coming to terms with what adulthood is and what adulthood means. Mm-hmm. And I think these three shows together, even though this doesn't make a ton of sense that we like them all at the same time, it does because, you know, tonally they're the same and they explore the same kind of topics. But you could almost, you know, Clone High is for people in high school, undergrads is for people in university, and then Mission Hill gets that like early to mid 20s crowd. And you can almost, you know, see the way that you grow up, maybe not you specifically, but these characters who are at least in some bins relatable, kind of go through the process from like 16 to 25.
For sure. And I think, you know, kind of what I briefly touched on when we were talking about undergrads, but how like, I'm sure if I watched that now, there'd be a lot of things that hit harder now that I lived through those years. Going back and watching Mission Hill really hits harder because I think because of our, I don't want to harp too much on this because we sort of made a joke about it earlier, but in our, you know, millennial, the boomers fucked everything up world we live in, a lot of the Mission Hill themes are not just for like mid-20s anymore. Like a lot of that
gets
like
extended out.
Yeah, that aimlessness and that what am I doing with my life and what's my direction thing, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, almost, gig economy, like the fact that he works a gig economy job or like his passion is a gig economy job is relevant still.
Absolutely. And I think that it's actually aged extremely well, probably not in the way it ever intended to, but just because it's such a different and arguably more fucked up world for our generation at the age we're at now than that show could have ever imagined us still being like the gig economy jobs and the what's our actual passion and let's go to the bars to see stuff we like, but we can't because we got to work or blah, 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 blah. I think this it's just a very relevant show still.
Well, then, wouldn't it make sense that on June 30th, what's his name? Bill Oakley announced plans for a spinoff called Gus and Wally, set 6 months after the original. So it will also be a period piece based in 2000. So keep an eye out for that. By the way, Mission Hill also has a solid, if a little less pop punk soundtrack. You get things like REM, Culture Club, New Order, Pavement. The theme song is a sped up instrumental of Cake's Italian Leather Sofa. And of course, the ska that ruined Jake. All right. And now there's the main event, Jake. Clone High.
Okay.
From 2002 to 2003, we played the intro song by Abandoned Pools earlier. Clone High was created by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, who went on to do things like The Lego Movie, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, 21 Jump Street, and Spider-Man Enter the Spider-Verse. These guys rule. They have credited Clone High as their quote-unquote film school. Also helping them on the show was Bill Lawrence, who went on to do things like Scrubs and Cougar Town and had come from Spin City. So Lord and Miller developed the show in the 90s while at Dartmouth College. Fox passed on the show, but MTV bought it. It was produced in 2002, 2003, and it actually aired first on Teletoon. Then MTV aired it. Then MTV pulled it because it got bad ratings and their depiction of Gandhi made people really upset.
Yeah.
Disappointing.
Yeah, I'm not sure how this, I do not mean this as a negative because I also love this show, but I never understood how of the three we're talking about, this one became the hit. Like I know it had the most famous voice cast for sure. And sort of had, I guess, the easiest marketability almost, but it's always kind of amazed me that this is the one that sort of the three anyway, this is the one that hit the biggest.
I think it's
even though they all kind of flopped in their own right.
Yeah, they all flopped like as in terms of like were the networks happy with how these shows did. Clone High definitely has like the most ardent cult following now, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But I think part of it is that if you were trying to describe these three shows to someone and get them to watch, the hook on Clone High is a little easier to draw someone in, I think. It's also, it makes the show a little weirder and maybe less accessible if you don't connect with that pop punk emo stuff, because this of the three, this is the one that lays the music cues and the reliance on the emo genre on the heaviest. But when you tell someone that a show is what this is, it might pique their interest. For example, if I told you that this is a show about teens and hypothetical great romances of the 20th century. What a great song. That is Great Romances of the 20th Century by Taking Back Sunday, which we pulled from an extremely long list of awesome music that makes its way into Clone High. We're going to get into that. I am not being facetious, though, when I introduce this as hypothetical teen Great Romances of the 20th Century. To give a little background, the creators, Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, told Entertainment Weekly in 2017, "We just did a bunch of concept drawings about what JFK or Joan of Arc would be like. I don't remember ever pitching a story. Chris would just say, they date and stuff. And people would laugh and understand the show." And that is maybe why it was successful. People would laugh and understand the show. It doesn't hurt either that Abandoned Pools, who are, that's the band of Tommy Walter of the Eels, performs the theme and most of the background music. And then, Jake, you mentioned it has such a great voice cast, including Will Forte, Nicole Sullivan, Michael McDonald, Donald Faison, Andy Dick, Sarah Chalk, Zach Braff. You can also trace all of those people through Phil Lord, Christopher Miller, and Bill Lawrence future projects. I think, so Donald Faison, Sarah Chalk, and Zach Braff were all main characters on Scrubs, and Nicole Sullivan and Michael McDonald both guest star on episode on, or they both have recurring characters on.
Yeah. And Scrubs
as well.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe both Neil Flynn and John C. McGinley from Scrubs also have guest appearances on Clone High.
Flynn's the best.
Yes, he is. Also did not know that Tommy Walter of Abandoned Pools was the bass player for Eels on their first record, which is crazy, because I was a huge Eels fan in high school. So that is, am. But I didn't know that.
So the characters they decided on, Abe Lincoln is the moral center and protagonist, navigating teen life in the same way a lot of these shows do, where he's kind of, you know, the straight man, but he falls into the traps of, hey, he has Joan of Arc, the girl next door who's in love with him and is a wonderful person, but he can't see because he has eyes for this stereotypically popular hot girl, Cleopatra. His best friend is Gandhi. JFK is the jerk jock figure. You also have Genghis Khan, MLK, George Washington Carver, Julius Caesar, you know, all these people involved. They even wanted to include more.
Your note has Buddy Holly there, and now I can just hear the joke of Buddy Holly in the episode. It made me laugh. Sorry.
And they wanted even more. They've said they were worried about like litigious families and estates. So like Marilyn Monroe, or what is supposed to be Marilyn Monroe, is briefly in it, but they don't like make mention of it, or that's not Marilyn Monroe. They wanted to use Albert Einstein, but they don't do that either, because I guess it's really expensive to use those people. You know, this comes out in 2002, 2003. It's at the same time a parody or satire of emo culture and shows like Dawson's Creek and 90210. It would make overt references to those things and those shows. But it's also its own version of it, aimed at, I guess, like a more sarcastic or more emo teen, rather than like a, I guess, standard pop teen is the way you could describe it. And again, like our earlier episodes, it explores things like drinking, pot, ADHD, sex, relationships, all that stuff. It's a well done show.
It is. And I think maybe to answer my own question, one of the reasons it hit so well is it addresses all of these things. Also, sometimes relatively straight, like the other two, but more than the other two. This one was just, Clone High was so goddamn goofy. In like a good, in a great way.
I'll bring
way.
The beards.
Like it also, it's, yeah, it also has those
such
quotes.
A good gag.
It also has those quotes where you can say the line and you laugh, which I don't know the other two did, even though the other two had extremely funny moments.
Yeah.
This one was more quotable, probably.
For sure. In terms of its connection to the emo and pop punk movement, David Anthony, writing for Vice in 2017, called it a time capsule of the early 2000s emo explosion. And he wrote, while the show's animation style ebbed toward that of Cartoon Network hits like the Powerpuff Girls and Samurai Jack, the character's fashion sense could have been cribbed directly from an emo article in 17. If you remember the Are You an Emo article, which I think we've referenced before. And then, so he goes into some of the things and how the wardrobes were an appropriate send up of emo fashion. And while the show was clearly taking aim at the overblown melodrama of Dawson's Creek and the relaunched Degrassi, Clone High's use of era appropriate touchstones gave it an air of authenticity that few of its contemporaries had. I'm speaking now, and I think that owes big time to Amy Fritz and Melinda Matkowski, who were the music supervisors, who there are so many instances in this show where not only is there a great punchline and a funny setup, but the needle drop hits so perfectly as well to drive it home.
100%. And it was also a show that really embraced music in a lot of stupid ways and good ways. Mm-hmm. Like you have the Ashley Angel of O-Town guest spot episode. You have the Marilyn Manson song. You have the Jack Black musical thing that I think is supposed to be a parody of Hair. But it's about raisins or something. I don't know. It's been a minute.
I don't remember that episode. But
it used music in creative ways that I think paves. And you see that a lot. Like you watch a show like Bob's Burgers now, which was is not a teen show, but is a cartoon that uses music extremely creatively. And I feel like this sort of laid a little bit of groundwork for that.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that because Bill Lawrence, in talking to this about the show to Entertainment Weekly, was asked about, you know, this kind of show paving the way for things like Rick and Morty and BoJack, where they are cartoon shows. And historically, that would limit their audience and maybe their, you know, their market appeal. But as Bill Lawrence said, I think Clone High not only can go toe to toe with shows, I think it's the best of that breed and a precursor. We're now in the age of these animated projects that are specific to a very small yet loyal and psychotic fan base, and that's how they thrive. That was Clone High to a T. What always amazes me is that I created a bunch of TV shows. There's a lot of good Scrubs fans on the internet, but I would tell you it's amazing to me that neck and neck with them are the people who are psychotically passionate about Clone High, even though it was only for 13 episodes. You definitely get that with BoJack and Rick and Morty and Bob's Burgers and shows like that. Mm-hmm. And I think Clone High, more than these other two as well, kind of paved the way for that. And maybe that was because Phil Lord and Christopher Miller and Bill Lawrence went on to so much success elsewhere, and the voice actors did as well. But again, I think a lot of it owes to the soundtrack. And you have, you know, I don't know, it must have been so expensive to get the rights to all this stuff, even though these aren't big bands at the time. But like, they use 4 Dashboard Confessional songs, 3 songs from the Mooney Suzuki. They play Stay Home by American Football, 2 songs by Thursday, 2 songs by Alkaline Trio. We played Taking Back Sunday earlier, Bumblefoot, Saves the Day, Catch 22, Snapcase, all these bands. And they play 4 songs from the Get Up Kids, including this one, Valentine. That is an overwhelming number of bands and songs to introduce for a show that lasted 13 episodes.
It is. And I think it's, like, to your point, is credit to the music supervisors. And I think the success and quality of this show also speaks just the talent involved. Like, I remember when the Lego movie came out, my first reaction was they made a fucking Lego movie. And then I went to see it and it's hilarious and amazing. And then when I learned it was Phil Lord and Chris Miller, I was kind of like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Like, that their style and their sense of humor and the way that they view dialogue, and because it's not just animation, and like the way they use dialogue and play with cliches is sort of what they've done their entire career doing. Like 21 Jump Street is basically an entire movie of playing with cliches, and it's hilarious. So I like, they're just so good at it.
Yeah. And like at a time when comic book movies are so oversaturated, they do Spider-Verse and it's like, it's a fresh take, even though there have been 200 comic book movies in the last two decades.
Yeah, totally.
And they have used that success, by the way, almost exclusively to try to relaunch Clone High. as they told Grantland in 2014, they tried to do a film adaptation. And they said, quote, our entire career has just been about getting Clone High back on the air. despite their immense success, they have yet to be able to do that. There is, if you watch Spider-Verse closely, there's an Easter egg where there's a billboard for Clone College. in July, all three creators announced a reboot with MTV Studios, which is now under a CBS umbrella. It is in the works with original writer Erica Rivenoja, Erica Rivenoja, working as a showrunner and co-writer. It will be reimagined for, they haven't been quite clear, you know, is on, they haven't been as specific as Undergrads or Mission Hill about where this show will take place and what it'll be like. I would imagine the fact that they use the term reimagined means we could get a fresher cast and, you know, a version that jumps us ahead, which, Jake, means we get to reimagine the soundtrack.
Hey, that's what we do.
With these shows all coming back, actually, first, Jake, let me get your take on all three of these shows announcing within a couple months of each other that they're coming back.
I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that we're in sort of a renaissance of emo and pop punk, and then these shows are coming back. Like, that all, I don't think there's necessarily a direct correlation, because obviously a lot of the emo and pop punk music being made is by people much younger than even you and I. But I do think that the nostalgia for that era, we're hitting now, you know, 20 years later. Like, it just, it does make logical sense. Personally, I'm just happy that they might be coming back, because all three sort of, I guess Mission Hill is a little more standalone episode to episode, but Undergrads and Clone High both end on cliffhangers. So it'll be nice to maybe get some resolution. Although, knowing the Clone High guys, it wouldn't surprise me if they don't even acknowledge it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the perfect way to wrap up a show about teen angst, is to just leave you hanging
and for sure
get no closure whatsoever. All right, Jake. So if Clone High were to come back here in 2020, which it sounds like it is, and they were to modernize it for a 2020 audience, and they said, hey, guys, look, the two music supervisors that we had before, Amy Fritz and Melinda Makowski, are no longer available. We would like Columbia House Party to help us with the soundtrack. Jake, what are we putting on there?
So I feel like, to your earlier point about Clone High being excellent at the needle drop, I went in my direction with thinking about a Clone High style needle drop. The image in my head is I don't know if you've seen the GIF where Abe's sitting there and his hand, the raising the hands up in a shrug, and then the needle drops. So the songs I picked, I went with Family Reunion by Graduating Life, which just seems like it would fit really well with some of the angrier pop punk songs that were often in the background of scenes in Clone High. I went with 17 by Sharon Van Etten, because that feels like it would suit a sad, quote unquote, sad Clone High montage pretty well. And then for a parody of, you know, a running to the airport style situation or a declaring love situation or even just a happy ending situation, I went with Distant Star by Spielberg's.
Great track. That is Distant Star by Spielberg's. Jake, I want a little bit of a different approach here. I tried to imagine what type of, you know, teen issues or storylines that the show might attack here in 2020. With that in mind, the first song I'm putting on there are Friends We Met Online by Joyce Manor. I think Joyce Manor fits the tone and aesthetic of the show really well anyway.
Agreed.
And then a song specifically about online friendships or online relationships would be a welcome addition in what would surely be an episode of Clone High Now. To your point about the needle drop and like the heavier background music, I'm going to put on Lauren by Prince Daddy and the Hyena.
That's such a good pick. That's such a good pick for this. Not only is it a good song, but like for this specifically, it's a great pick.
Yeah, like you could add, I can just hear the Lauren in a scene of the show and then the rest of the song kind of drifting into the background as dialogue picks up or whatever. And then my last pick is going to call back to an earlier singles episode we did. I feel like if you were going to do a teen show now that was pop punk and emo, you have to include an element of emo rap because that's elbowed its way into the culture. So I'm going to include Lucid Dreams by Juice WRLD rather, that we did a single episode on a couple months ago now. These episodes fly by.
They sure do.
It was a couple months ago. So yeah, I think there's got to be room for the emo rap element if you're redoing Clone High here in 2020, because I think those subgenres are a little closer together than they were when, you know, in the early 2000s.
I think that's a great point, actually. I think that all makes sense.
Jake, I have one question for you on your picks.
Hmm.
Had you not used Origami Angel as your modern day bonus pick for the Tony Hawk soundtrack, would you have put them in here?
No. Okay. I actually thought about it and then had to be like, wait, you've used them before. But I don't know if they suit Clone High as much. I think I could see them for an undergrads than a Clone High.
Yeah, that's fair. Like the more like math rocky side has to go on. It goes more to the undergrad sound and the more like closer to emo, I guess, stays on the.
I think so. I don't mean to make it quite so black and white. Or reductive there, but that's where my brain went.
Origami Angel would be a good one for undergrads. Do you have a pick for Mission Hill for throwing some ska at it?
I mean, you could do any of the cool new ska, like any Grey Matter or Kill Lincoln.
Any of the cool new ska bands that everyone knows, you should name them.
Follow Ska Tune Network on Twitter and then you'll know them.
Absolutely do that.
But yeah, I think Kill Lincoln would go extremely well.
All right. Kill Lincoln by name would also go well with Clone High, maybe.
That's true, actually.
Ayo. All right, Jake, we have talked about a lot of songs on this podcast. It is now time to pick one for the mixtapes B-side. What are you thinking?
Ooh,
I'm very, very torn on this one.
Me too. I feel like I want to do the undergrad's theme song.
Okay. This is where I was a little torn, is like, should we pick something from Clone High? Because Clone High dominated the conversation.
True.
But also, like, I don't want to put, like, the Clone High theme song, I don't believe, is on Spotify, so we can't physically add it to the B-side anyway. But I don't know. I feel like the undergrad's theme song like does represent, like that's what I think of, even though it wasn't the Clone High song, that's the song I associate with that Teletoon block.
Yeah, I think that I agree with that. And that's the song that is strongest in my brain of this era. Although I'm looking at it, I'm not sure it's on Spotify either.
I guess the other good thing about this one is, like, maybe we'll do a Good Charlotte episode at some point, just for kicks or whatever. But I don't know that, you know, all these other bands that we included have, you know, better songs and better tracks that we would use or talk about.
Yeah.
But you're right. The Click is not on Spotify.
Huh.
What is with all these songs not being on Spotify?
That makes it more challenging.
Yeah, that's a difficulty. What do you want to do with that, Jake? Do we just do it and put a placeholder in, or do we pick a different song?
I think we do it and put a placeholder in, because your point about Good Charlotte is correct.
We'll throw something else on this from this episode on the actual Spotify playlist when it airs. But spiritually, it's The Click by Good Charlotte. This is not the first time we've had to do that, by the way. We put I Feel Like Dying by Lil Wayne on as an addendum to the Carter 3 episode because it was one of the leaks. It didn't fit. It's not on Spotify either, so we used Gossip. So this will be the third time we use a stand-in. Do you have a preference on the stand-in, Jake?
No, I don't think so. I guess my brain sort of leans Spielberg's only because I don't think we'll do a Spielberg's episode.
Okay.
But
I will.
We will do a Taking Back Sunday. We'll probably do a Get Up Kids. So I feel like we might not do a Toasters, but I'm okay with not putting the Toasters on.
Yeah. Also, you know, Spielberg's is a little closer to Good Charlotte than
yeah, I think
the Toasters, I think.
I think so.
All right. Sorry to be so confusing, guys. If you're following along on my Spotify playlist of the B-sides, it will be Distant Star by Spielberg's. Spiritually, that you will know that it's The Click by Good Charlotte, and you can go fire that up on YouTube instead. Jake? This was a fun one. I think I'm going to go watch Mission Hill.
Yeah, I think I'm going to watch all three in a row.
Yeah. Wait, like all three shows?
Yeah, well, I like your idea that they sort of chronicle different periods of life.
All right. That's a good idea. All right. You do that, listeners. Please let us know your connections to these shows and whether this... You know, I know there's a variety of ages in the Discord chat, so maybe these shows don't click for someone, but maybe you can go back and you'll appreciate them now. So let us know what you think of these shows and the music, the way they use music, and your connections to them, or your lack of connections to them. And we will talk to you guys again for your August mailbag. Thanks again, and thanks, Jake.